And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Front and Center, brought to you by Frontier Communications. I'm Dan Lovato, and we have an interesting hour ahead. So honored to have in our studios the Commissioner of the Department of Economic and Community Development, Catherine Smith, and Mike Shanahan, co-founder of CADCO. And welcome, both of you, to Front and Center.
Thanks, Dan.
Pleasure to be with you.
Commissioner, we'll start with you. Describe for our audience what DECD is all about.
So the Department of Economic and Community Development has the lead role for the state in terms of developing a strategy to grow our economy, add jobs, and make sure that we have vibrant communities for our citizens to live and work in. So it's a big mission, but it is one that's so important to the future of Connecticut.
And Mike, talk about CADCO.
Well, CADCO's, we just celebrated our 20th anniversary. We manufacture commercial food service equipment. Our facility is located in up in Winsted, which is in the northwest corner, the beautiful Litchfield Hills, as I call it. We bought this building 2 years ago, but we've been a resident of that area in manufacturing in Winsted for almost 20 years. And it's been great. We've been able to grow our business, and it's been excellent. It really has, and proud to be here.
So how did you and the state interact?
Well, the state's actually been involved with us a few times. When we bought a small company in New Jersey back in early 1999, we definitely wanted to move them to Connecticut, and the facility we were in before, the state actually gave us a $200,000 low-interest loan that we paid back. And then in the last 5 years, the state has helped us with a series of training programs. They're actually in the Department of Labor. We did some hiring programs, a few with them. And then recently, after we'd purchased this building and been in it, the building looked so good it needed some new updated technical equipment. So we're out purchasing things like Trump fiber laser and additional automated wiring machines and things. So the state was very helpful in the purchase of the fiber laser.
So, Commissioner, explain the process that
Sure.
Mike's company had to go through.
Yeah, and let me just take a step back and say one of the reasons we put these programs in place at the state level is the recognition that manufacturing, which had been in the declining, you know, for many, many years here in the state, really had the great potential to create a lot of new jobs. There's really a new emphasis on manufacturing in the United States, and particularly manufacturing on advanced things, unusual, one-of-a-kind kind of manufacturing. So we wanted to create some programs that would be easy for the local manufacturers to use, that would give them the capability of making the necessary investments in their business to be competitive. Because we know manufacturing is a global business now. It's not just New England that we're competing against, not just the United States. It's everywhere. So we really want the companies that work here to have access to capital, if that's what need be, access to training programs that might help them develop their workforce, all of the different components that are going to make their business as successful as possible. So over the last 5 years, we've actually developed a number of new programs, and I think these are the kinds of things that Mike's taking advantage of. The Department of Labor has had a step-up program, as they called it, which was essentially a program to allow companies to get some training support as they brought a new hire on board. So it was 6 months of a subsidy for a new employee. More recently, through the Manufacturing Innovation Fund, which came into place about 2 years ago with the support of the governor's office and the legislature, we have incumbent worker training programs there where the state will match the dollars that the company's putting into that training to help them double their training, if you will. And we've also helped in manufacturing equipment purchases, again, a matching fund type of arrangement. So there's a number of different programs we put in place, again, to help companies that know they need to make investments in order to get ahead. And this is really an example of Mike's company is a great example of a company that's figured out how to take full advantage of that, of those great programs.
Yeah, so, Mike, did you go online? Where did you get the paperwork?
You know,
how did you do this?
Well, let me tell you how the programs, as far as I was concerned, the new programs from the state came about. I went to a step-up conference, and I met people from the state, And they were explaining the programs to me, and that was some of the hiring programs, some of the training programs. So I made physical contact with people. Once you've made that, things start to happen. And those were really, I know you did them around the state in different locations. And I probably spent at least a couple hours there that day saying, wow, there's some programs today that I think we can take advantage of. And when I took them back to, you know, our management team, they said, let's move forward. Let's see what we can do. Let's see if we can take advantage of these. And we've done training programs not just once. This is the second phase through that we're doing some of these training programs. They're smaller than the, you know, the manufacturing voucher grant, but every bit is important.
Right. So, I mean, I think the concept here is make it easy for companies to take advantage of some of these programs. So we've tried to reduce the hassle factor of the application process so that you can, in fact, not have to hire 3 accountants and 4 lawyers to get access to these funds. So we've tried to do that, and we've tried to really tailor these programs to things that the companies really need. So, you know, we went out and asked, what is their top need? And companies said, we need to upgrade our equipment. We need to train our incumbent workforce. We've just introduced a new apprenticeship program because we heard from companies, you know, it's really good for us when we bring someone in who's in high school or in community college, and they work as they're learning so that they get the hands-on experience and the education at the same time. So we've started a new program there just in the last 6 or 8 months that is now catching on. So that's the whole idea, is to make companies more successful here.
So describe the food service equipment manufactured by CATCO.
We manufacture all types of warming equipment, countertop griddles. We have a complete line of specialty carts. We call it light equipment. And it's not, you know, your big monstrous ovens. And we also sell a lot of, we're the leader in countertop convection ovens commercially. So we're using a lot of flat stainless steel and through our facility. And as I mentioned before, we do all of it through, we either punch it or we put it on the laser today, depending if it's flat stock or the punch is slower, but it's a little more flexible. And then we put it on some, we have high-tech Trump benders, and we can do some amazing things with benders that would surprise people. And the quality of the equipment, the quality of the product is excellent. People use it in food service to make a living. So it's not something you buy for somebody. In the old days, we used to call, they put it in the closet. These are all used. So, you know, the function of the product is critical. And, of course, for us, being an American manufacturer, the quality and the ease of use and all those things are so important. And the reason, 10 years ago, we as a company made a decision. We're either going to go forward and really step up our manufacturing, or we won't be able to compete. And the reason we did it ourselves, even though it required some investments, we control our own design and we control our own quality. So if there's a quality issue on something, and it happens, you know, life testing, whatever, in certain applications, we correct it because our product has to be better.
Some people might not know, so describe for our audience what a punch is, what a laser punch is.
Well, a punch actually pushes the hole, punches it through the metal. And so it's a little different. It's slower. You have to hold onto the sheet because it moves. Certain things it can do, tool. These punching machines are so sophisticated, though. There's like a multi-tool in the middle. So the programming, they're all CAD run. So they're all programming. And within the programming, will tell you which tool it's going to use, and it automatically makes the change. It's absolutely, to watch it, it's fascinating. Now when you get to the laser, a laser works on two principles, either CO2 or fiber. Fiber's a little bit more expensive as far as an energy source, but your cut is so much smoother. You don't have to deburr it and whatever. So we use our laser cut with some CO2 and some fiber, but you have much less scrap. You can get closer to the edges because it doesn't move the sheet. It's the creativity on the laser is unbelievable. And it's as creative as your engineers are and how well they know CAD and how good a designers they are. It's phenomenal what they can do.
Now, did you buy the machine from a Farmington-based firm?
We bought it from Trump. We have two benders from Trump. We have the True Punches from Trump. Those were all made. The benders were made in Austria. The True Punch was made in Germany. I have to be in those factories. The laser was made right here in Farmington, Connecticut. I couldn't be prouder to say
that's great.
It never left our state when it was delivered from the manufacturer. And I think that was pretty important to us. We were excited because they make it in different places of the world, but I wanted it to come from Farmington.
Commissioner, I see you're smiling.
Well, I'm smiling, and I want to ask Mike a question because, you know, one of the things I hear, because I go around actually to middle schools and high schools and talk about what a great career you can have in manufacturing here in Connecticut. And one of the things I hear is, well, you know, they have this vision that it's a greasy floor and there's, you know, a lot of heavy lifting. And what you're describing is not that at all, even though it's metal that you're working with and it's going to make holes. It's going to be a big thing. But tell us about what it's like to be a worker in your factory.
Well, I tell you, it's not just about the equipment. It's a lot about the process. And all I remember was I bought this book called Lean Thinking, and it's really lean manufacturing. It comes out of the Toyota manufacturing system, but it's more than manufacturing. It's about flow and efficiency and everything. And here is I'm a sales and marketing guy, but I've got a lot of money invested in what I'm doing, and we got our people to start lean and say, we're going to start this process. I read the book, sent people to started the seminars, had a great guy out of Tennessee, Fred Flynn, who was a consultant for him, and he's helped us over the last 10 years. If you came into our facility today and saw it, in fact, I picked up two small pieces of paper on it because that was about all I could find this morning. It's clean. It's open. It's a great place to work. People smile. And, you know, you get to know your employees in this environment, and you can have conversations. Our efficiency levels have drastically improved. And it's because the employees are the added element. And without the employees, without them, none of this works.
And, Commissioner, when it comes to the manufacturing sector, this is now the norm rather than the exception, right?
Absolutely. I'd say, you know, a number of our companies in the state are like top tier in terms of their efficiency, their Six Sigma, if you will, type of companies. And what's great is that the companies have adopted not only better manufacturing techniques, and by the way, one of our Manufacturing Innovation Fund programs is our voucher program, so companies can take a voucher and get someone like Fred Flynn, who you just mentioned, to come into their factory and help them make sure the movement of the equipment is right, that their processes are as streamlined as they can possibly be. But it's I think what one of the things that's happened, and it continues to happen here in the state, is that we've transformed that dirty environment that we talked that we imagined right. as kids about what manufacturing was like into these high tech places where people are using machinery to do the hard work, and they themselves are programming. They're, you know, there's jobs from A to Z in terms of the level of sophistication required. So you have top tier engineers doing the design work, right? But you have other people at maybe lower pay levels that are doing other pieces of work. But it's all in a flow. It's all in a process that really makes sense for the company, and again allows our companies to compete against some of the best in the world. So it's very exciting, and that's one of the reasons, again, we wanted to make sure that we were providing the support both through our Manufacturing Innovation Fund as well as through our educational system at the community colleges, at the technical high schools, and even in our universities and, you know, colleges here, that we can provide the workforce that's going to be necessary for this ever-changing environment which the companies are operating.
And we do want to get into that before this program ends today. Mike, I want to get back to CADCO for just a moment. So your latest interaction with the state, you were looking for financial assistance in the area of getting this punch machine. What was it?
No, the manufacturer, we were seriously looking at buying this laser, and after just purchasing a building that we bought and renovating it, you know, cash flow is critical in any business, and we'd spent a lot of cash getting this building correct, and it's a beautiful building. Now we want to upgrade the equipment. So the amount from the voucher fund was $50,000. And it sure helped with the down payment on the laser. It was tremendous. It couldn't have come at a better timing. But since then, they're actually the states involved right now. We're in our third Kaizen event this year, and we've done all three of them this year, these events, through Concept, where there's another Connecticut company, works very closely with the state, and we've had three grants. The first two grants, believe it or not, came from Eversource, the power company.
Right.
And the third help is from the state. And it's amazing. Eversource, kind of interesting. You have to, 60 days after the event, you have to go through an efficiency with them. They come in and they review, what did it help? How did Constep help you? The whole thing. And the state wants to know the same thing about it is, but Constep's been very helpful. There's a gal there, I'm trying to think Lauren's last name, but she is, there's facilitators who know how to work with your employees. And as Catherine said, the event we have now, most of the people in the event are on the line producing the equipment, and it's amazing. They just love, they want to learn too. They want to do a better job, and they want to create more value in what they're doing, and we want them to do the same.
You know, Mike, it's funny, and within the state government, we've started to introduce Lean and Kaizen events over the last few years as well. And in my own department, we've now done 15 Kaizen events, and they were a week-long effort to improve one business process or another that we manage. Same deal, right? The people that are doing the work know it the best. They also know where the waste is. They know, you know, where the roadblocks are and the bottlenecks. And having them redesign the process, fantastic.
It's just amazing, this flow. We call it flow and continuous improvement. But we did a major Kaizen in the early part of the year, and it was going to be a six-month process. Once we're trained, it's our people. I set it up, and I step completely away, because that's the last thing you need is me in these things. And I would get copies of the updates and the meetings and the whole thing. I told this gal I couldn't believe it. The efficiency she created just in flow of paperwork, when you receive an order, when you ship an order, till it comes back, it's absolutely amazing. The girls in our office are so much happier than they were before, and they were very much involved. But it went through, it was all about flow in the company, and it affected all parts of it. But usually you think of lean manufacturing or lean, and it sits out in the manufacturing floor. It's about efficiencies, and it's about flow.
Well, and explain how important that is, efficiency, what it means in the area of how you save from a dollars and cents perspective.
Well, how are you going to compete in this market? No matter what happens in Connecticut, it's not going to be the lowest place to procure your labor. It's not going to be. You have to make it up in efficiencies. You have to make it up in better processes. And, you know, you can't just be in a commodity business, because that'll end up in China or India or someplace else where the quality and the design and all that doesn't matter. But you have to look at every way you can compete and make things happen, because you're competing in our industry. It's, you know, commercial food service is a big, big industry, even just the equipment side of it. And we compete with companies all over the United States and many that have turned to China. But realistically, China's been pretty easy to compete with, because their quality doesn't represent ours.
Mm. Commissioner, you're shaking your head again. Go ahead.
Well, you know, and it's interesting. We've, they're clearly, and I think you've hit the nail on the head, the commodity-like manufacturing is more challenging here in the state. I will say we have a number of companies that do a terrific job at it, and in large measure that's because they have a really incredibly productive workforce, and one that is constantly improving and making the change to make their process a little bit better and bring the cost down just a smidge more. But in if you think about the sweet spot of manufacturing for the state, it really is in the area where a customer might need a special design for not a unlimited run, but a finite number of certain pieces of material, or, you know, whatever it might be. So, you know, those are the areas where Connecticut really can compete. And we have now a cluster of, you know, we have 4,500 manufacturers in the state. And they are very advanced in their thinking and in their productivity. And many of them are clustered into a two or three or four different areas, like aerospace manufacturing or shipbuilding or medical devices. And when you have that kind of cluster as well, those companies can help each other in a sense. They can be, you know, suppliers to each other and customers of each other. We can build a workforce around that skill set that's needed for the types of equipment. Like you mentioned Trump, they're, you know, they produce a lot of great equipment that's used all over the world, but here in Connecticut as well. But having people that know that equipment and are trained to work on it, all of these things add up to kind of a critical mass, if you will, that really becomes important in an industry like manufacturing, because it is so specialized and it is something that is incredibly competitive, so that you need expertise. So it's one of about five or six areas in I'm going to call it business clusters or industries that we have looked at and decided they probably have the greatest potential for growth in the state and will have a terrific impact on the economy. And so that's one of the reasons we've put a lot of these programs together to try to help companies like Mike's.
Now, you mentioned 4,500 manufacturing facilities
Yes.
here in the state of Connecticut.
Yes.
That's a lot. 4,500.
It is a lot. And what's really important as well is it's a huge contributor to our economy. For example, most of our exports, and we do about $15 billion of exports. For a small state like ours, that is a huge number. We're like, if we were a country, we'd be number five in the world, just
wow.
to give you the perspective. And most of that is from our manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really an important part of the economy, both for what we do in terms of job creation internally, but also for generating that external perspective and bringing those foreign dollars into the state. So big part of the economy, an important one for us to continue to invest in.
Just as an aside, and correct me on this if I'm wrong, I thought I read where France is the number one country to which we export.
Yes, it's sometimes Canada. We do a lot of business with Canada, but Northern Europe has tended to be a very large consumer of our products. And again, I think while they are also a higher cost location like Connecticut, as Mike was talking about, I think in the United States, we actually beat them on productivity. And of course, quality is very, very high here. And another thing we're very strong on here in this state and in the United States is innovation. So our people are coming up with new ideas that make it lighter, faster, quicker, better. And they're really focused all the time on how to improve the customer experience. So I think all of those things have helped Connecticut companies get ahead.
Welcome back to Front and Center, brought to you by Frontier Communications. I'm Dan Lavallo, and we are joined in studio today by the Commissioner of the Department of Economic and Community Development, and also by Mike Shanahan, co-founder of CADCO, which is, what, 20 years old, Mike?
20 years ago we started.
And what motivated you to start this company, which manufactures food service equipment?
Well, I'd worked for two companies, Waring and Hamilton Beach, who were in this business. And at the time, I was in my mid-40s. Only had two kids in private colleges. But I said to my wife, I don't want to work for a corporation anymore. She said, why don't you start your own business? Easier said than done. Best thing I've ever done in my life. And it started from there. And it's not an easy process, but it's very, very fulfilling. And it's exciting to find new areas that I was never familiar with. I was a sales and marketing person, but to be into manufacturing and operations and to learn more, you should never stop learning.
But what did you do to educate yourself to take this next step?
Well, when we really got into manufacturing, I studied some companies that I knew that were very efficient. One was in Italy. Another one was here, Trump. And they embraced a philosophy, what I called earlier, lean thinking or lean manufacturing, but it's really developed beyond that. We call it now more of a continuous, at our place, we call it continuous improvement. And it's within your whole place. Whenever, it's like when you uncover something that needs to be changed and you change it, you look underneath it and you find something else. So it's continuous. the degrees of improvement may not be the same each time, but the continuous improvement never should never stop. And it doesn't stop in our organization, because I keep everybody, keep thinking, keep contributing. Everybody counts. All your thoughts count.
Now, Mike, you talk about always educating yourself, and I know education starts when you're very young,
sure.
And that's a goal, Commissioner. Talk about
it. Yeah, you know, I mean, recognizing that manufacturing is an important part of the economy and wanting to make sure we have the workforce for companies like Mike's so they can continue to grow. You know, when Governor Malloy came into office, one of the things we did was look at the community colleges, our technical high schools, UConn, all the different educational institutions we have here that produce people that can work in the manufacturing industry. And we made a lot of investments to try to improve the quality and especially the quantity of students that would be graduating. Because we heard from many manufacturers, they were really struggling, and even today still struggling, to fill the vacancies they have on their staffs for people that can come in and do the work that they need to get done. So immediately in the first special session we had on jobs in 2011, the legislature agreed to put $20 million into our community colleges. And what we did was improve first the core learning area, as Nuntuck had been held out as Nuntuck Community College, sorry, had been held out as like the best in our system for manufacturing. And so we took that model and replicated it in three additional community colleges around the state, and subsequently earned, because of that work, $15 million more dollars from the federal government. It's nice to have them pay the bill for once, and expanded into three more schools. So now the community college system alone can put out about 300 additional people every year because of the increase in capacity in these programs. Not only that, but they improved the equipment that's in there. They modernized it so that it really looks like what's on the floor of the manufacturers that are here in the state. So all that has been great. UConn, because of the engineering demand for a lot of these companies, has agreed to expand their School of Engineering by 70%. I mean, this is unheard of in this era where lots of colleges and universities are, in fact, shrinking due to budget constraints. You know, recognizing the importance of STEM, you know, science, technology, right, engineering, and math, to all of our key industries, but particularly for manufacturing, we made the investment in UConn, and now they're already, I think they now have almost doubled the number of undergraduates and graduate students alike. So it's really been a terrific effort to try to meet the needs of these companies. And, you know, some of those folks are brand new right out of college, young people, and some of them are community college type graduates who are switching careers. So we think that's a very important part of making sure Connecticut stays competitive in these really important jobs.
And we're talking well-paying jobs here, aren't we?
Super-paying jobs, yeah. I mean, well above average, and, you know, many of them start in the, I'm going to say, $50,000 to $60,000 range and grow from there. So it's definitely a great opportunity for kids. You know, we October is Manufacturing Month, which I think is important for everybody to know out there. And during that month, we have numbers of companies around the state that actually open their doors to grade school kids as well as high school kids and college kids, so they can come in and see what their operation looks like and get that feel for what a manufacturing job might be like. And we're finding in, you know, getting kids early on to recognize that manufacturing is not what they have in their head, and it's way better than flipping a burger. Those are the kinds of things we're kind of we're trying to work through in Manufacturing Month and around the rest of the year to get kids interested in this particular area.
Because what we hear is that particularly over the next 5 or 10 years, there are going to be thousands of jobs available right here in the state of Connecticut in manufacturing waiting to be filled. Is that right?
You got it. I mean, just one company that's a very large manufacturer here in the state, Electric Boat, is talking about hiring 4,000 people over the next 5 to 10 years, because they're going to start building two submarines a year versus one. That is a phenomenal opportunity for all of our kids in school right now to think about a career with Electric Boat.
Mike, I know particularly with today's technology, one of the things that excites you and CADCO is how, in many respects, you can compete with the big guys. How about talking about that?
Yes, I'm pretty familiar with the industry because I was on the North American Food Equipment Manufacturers Board for 8 years. So our little $10, $12 million company. And I'm there talking with guys that are 100, 200 million. And I'm really listening and realizing that we're pretty flexible in what we can do. We can move faster. I've seen it happen. Some of them say, well, Mike, how did you get that done so quickly? I said, we don't have as much red tape as you do. You know, but you can compete. But I'd just like to talk a little bit about the employees. We've had a strategy since the beginning, and it's been something I believed in. We're not making submarines. So we can't always be the highest paid employer. We just can't be. But our company has health insurance for every employee, okay? And we pay 80% of it. We have 401k. We have short-term disability. We'll pay for half of their YMCA for them and their family if they'll keep themselves healthy. We believe in the whole quality in the work environment of the employee. And I look at it, and before I came, I did a little say that I had our HR person, Pat, help. We have 10 employees that have been with us 15 or more years.
Fantastic.
For a company that's 20 years old, that's a lot. Half of our employees, including them, have been with us at least 5 years and many closer to. You create a work environment they want to work with. And then when you do well, you've got to share some of it with them. And we've tried to do that, and I wanted my employees to believe it. But we're not an electric boat. We're not making submarines. But we're making very good quality food service equipment that's competitive in today's market.
Commissioner, we hear, and Mike, you can weigh in on this too, we hear that while Connecticut is a difficult state in which to do business, what are we to believe?
Well, you know, I think there's more smoke there than fire, because there are so many companies like Mike's that have been so successful here. But having said that, we recognize in the state that there's no place to do but better. We've got to continuously improve and make sure that we're as easy a state to do business in as possible. That's why we brought Lean into the state. That's why we said we've got to make our processes customer friendly. And, you know, inside of DECD, my organization, we refer to the folks that we work with as our customers, because we really want people to understand. We recognize that it's got to be easier for them. We have to have services that meet their needs. And that attitude has been brought in this administration to all the different segments of government to really look out for and make sure we're focused on the areas that our customers need the most support in. We're in difficult straits budget-wise in the state, as everyone knows, but that's mean even more that we have to focus on the value add that really is important to the people, the constituents here in the state, and let go of the kinds of work that no longer is necessary or isn't adding value from their perspective. But there are certainly areas inside the state that we're continuing to work with. Energy, the cost of energy is one area that the governor has put a lot of attention on, creating strategies to get us to a lower cost environment. You know, we do not have any natural resources here that create energy, except maybe the sun and the wind, which we are trying to use as much as possible. But we recognize we've got to have other alternatives then that will make it easier for people to keep that cost on their P&L, if you will, at a minimum. You know, we've been trying very hard to improve the transportation systems in the state. We're working on new rail, improving the bridges in the state, and working on I-84 and 95 to make them less congested. So there are clearly places that need continued work, but I think we've made a lot of progress, and our ears are flapping trying to get more information on what gets in the way for businesses. So I'm always interested in hearing, and I've asked Mike, you know, if there's things he'd like to share that he thinks we could be doing a little bit better on.
Well, it's interesting. Last Friday morning, I went to a CBI seminar. I was invited. Some of my friends at Trump that's in that organization. I'm not. We're in Northeast Employers Association. And there were some interesting panels. And obviously, there are some budget concerns at the state, and they have to be solved. Concerned about housing, because we're the only state right now that housing isn't going up. But if you correct some of these issues, it will. But I tell you, there's two things I got out of this thing that I can't get out of my mind since last Friday. One of them is what we have to offer in the state of Connecticut, from the fact that we're so close to the metropolitan New York, we're so close to Boston, we're so so much culture is around us and easy to get to. We're close to the ocean, great outdoors, great quality of life, and we need to sell more of that because I moved from Ohio 40 years ago, and I moved to Connecticut. I didn't know anybody. I said, this is where I want to live, and I've been here 42 years. Met my wife Peggy here, raised my whole family here, have no intention of leaving. I don't want to become a Florida resident, although I do have to say I own a condo down there. I have no intention of doing that. Connecticut's made me what I am today, and I'd like to stay here. But one other point that a guy brought up that I thought was really interesting, and he did an example of a company that left Connecticut and they moved to Atlanta. And when he met with one of the executives, he said, how did the move go? Not well. He said, what was the problem? He said, culture shock. He said, they realized, first of all, you couldn't get in and out of Atlanta.
That's right.
And second of all, there was no access to all this culture and outdoors.
Right.
Once you got out of Atlanta, you're in the Georgia swamps. You know, and he said, it was culture shock.
Yeah.
He said, so I'm turning that, I'm not against Georgia. God bless
right.
Georgia. You know, they have the Masters there. I love my favorite tournament. But we have a lot to offer as a state, and we need to bring that forward and say what we have. And even the Four Seasons, this guy said, is a positive. We're all looking forward to fall now, right?
Right.
Weren't we hot last week?
That's
we're looking
it.
Forward to fall. We'll be looking forward to winter, and we'll be looking forward to winter to be over and spring to come. He said, I think it motivates my employees. He said, they're always looking forward to something instead of saying, just another ho-hum sunny day.
Listen, I just had family move back from Florida because of the Four Seasons. They missed the Four Seasons.
There you go.
So, you know, it's fascinating.
Well, Mike, you couldn't have said it better. And I do think we sometimes forget about the real strengths the state has. And I'd add to it the people because, you know, whenever I go to any company and I talk to them about what one of the things that keeps them in the state, they always talk about the quality of their workforce. And you just mentioned it. You know, you've got long-standing employees. They add a lot of value for you. They're thinking ahead. They're helping you move the business forward. And that is something that you can't count on, I don't think, as readily in some other parts of the country. And clearly, when people go offshore, they have much more challenging time dealing with workforce issues. So it is a real plus for the state and something we can't forget about.
Now, Commissioner, I know one of your goals was to streamline the process of monies and grants going to particular companies. So talk about how you did
that. Well, you know, I came from the private sector myself, so 30 years in financial services. And when I came on board with the state, I really felt strongly, particularly after listening to a few companies on my listening tour I did when I first came on board, it was very important that we work at the speed of business, not at the speed of government. So we started a new program called the Small Business Express, and I made them add that word express on because I said, you know what, we're going to set targets and we're going to beat them in terms of the time it takes for a company to apply for and get access to the capital through this program. So we brought that to every new program that we've introduced and to our old programs that we have on the shelf by simplifying, streamlining, really asking our customers only for the information that we absolutely need to process the application, being as quick as they are on the timelines, and making sure that this is not a, you know, again, we don't need three accountants and four attorneys to get something closed. We can work through it together. So I feel it's really actually something that maybe sets Connecticut a bit apart in economic development tools because we really are attempting to make this simple, not, you know, we got to have 85 different pieces of paper in order to be able to get this processed for you. So I hope it's working. Mike is sort of nodding yes.
Catherine, yeah. I have to say, it's amazing the change in the last 5 years with the state. Every one of these programs, I'll give you for instance, on the manufacturing voucher program, not only was the application, I did most of the work on the application. Obviously, I had to have some help from our director of finance. And that, but I did almost all of it. I was able to talk to somebody who the state had assigned to it. When the application was put through and accepted, they gave me a date that was going to be reviewed. They beat that date by 2 weeks. And they said, once we got it, they reviewed it and they approved it, the money came like 4 weeks later. And it said it could be like 4 to 8 weeks. And it was 4 weeks. And I'm going, something's changed here. And I've seen that also in the training programs, the Department of Labor. I mean, we've worked with Michelle Caffey at the Department of Labor. And she came and visited our place 2 days after the phone call. Applications were done the following week. Approval of the application. Money's been funded. It took only a few weeks. And that wasn't the case 5 years ago. You know, you applied and hoped and hoped to hear back from somebody.
Well, you know, and it's a mindset, right? I mean, you know this from your own business. It's a mindset. And what we've done is, you know, we've in DECD, we are now operating with probably 15 to 20% fewer employees, but doing probably 5 to 10 times the volume of work. So it's about getting people engaged in the process, having them understand the value they're adding. And then they will run with the ball. They will get it done. And I'm very proud of the DECD employees, the CCAT folks that help us with the voucher program, the Department of Labor that helps us with the incumbent worker training and apprenticeship programs. I mean, those folks are really stepping up to meet your needs as opposed to, you know, meet some kind of state, you know, budget process or whatever it might be.
Commissioner, you love your job. You seem very enthusiastic. You love your job?
You know, it's been really interesting and fun. It exceeded my expectations. Coming from the private sector, I had in my head that it might slow me down. It might be hard to get things done. And instead, what I found is, you know, again, a workforce that's willing to step up and make things happen inside state government. You know, the governor and I have worked very closely together on our strategy and on these programs. He's been incredibly supportive and allows us to do the detailed design work while he says, you know, I want to invest in manufacturing, figure out what needs to be done. So it's been, it's exceeded my expectations. And I feel, although there is still much work to be done, that we've made a difference, that we've helped a lot of companies. You know, several thousand companies now have been through a voucher program or a Small Business Express and gotten the help. It's just going to give them that leg up that they might need to make that next investment that otherwise might wait for 5 years. And that's our goal, is to help them be that much more competitive that much more quickly. The economy moves very quickly, and so we have to move quickly, too.
So the governor said, here's my idea. I'm going to hand you the ball. You run with it?
Yeah, he's been terrific that way. You know, I'll just give you an example on this Manufacturing Innovation Fund. We had we talked about the need to make changes in sort of the landscape around manufacturing. And as you know, we did an early investment in people by the community college investment and the UConn investment. But we were still hearing it was still very challenging for companies. So I went to him, and we together went to the legislature and said, we really think we need this fund. We asked that it be composed of virtually all the board being people in the manufacturing industry. So we have 11 seats on the board. 9 of them are filled with people that are running companies, manufacturing entities around the state, all different industry parts. And we said, so we asked them, what do you need? And these programs that we've developed, the voucher fund, incumbent worker training, we have a program we haven't talked about called Energy on the Line. It helps companies upgrade their facilities for energy efficiency. We added all these programs with their direction. And that's what government should be, right? Responsive to the needs of the constituent companies here in the state or our constituents generally, and creating things that add value for, you know, all of the industries that are important here in the state. So it's exceeded my expectations.
Mike.
Catherine, you said something that's really, really important, because this came up at this seminar last week. We get so many phone calls. If you're a successful company, you get so many calls either from another state
who
wants you to move. Here's all these incentives, or for somebody, some capital firm that wants to take your company over. And if you feel like the state wants you, you feel like you can be successful. I've got my son-in-law involved in the business. My son's involved in the business. My daughter Erin's been with me almost the business since the beginning. I've got some great employees that have been with me a long time. I have no intention of selling this company. I don't care what you want to pay for it. But, boy, do I get solicitations. So when the state is proactive and makes you feel like they care, it really says, I don't even want to listen to the phone call. I don't even know if I want to answer the phone call. And it puts a set of mind in you that's different. It really helps.
Great. I mean, it is one of the greatest frustrations I have is the competition between and amongst states, because it's so it's really not healthy. I mean, I think as a united group of states, we ought to be saying we're competing against other countries in the world, not we're competing against each other. Because I know many, many companies get those calls from North Carolina, Texas. The governors of those states come and try to recruit companies away. We're focused on making sure that the companies that are here have the best possible playing field on which they can play. And that's really our focus.
Do we go to other states?
We're not as active that way. I will tell you that we do look abroad quite a bit. We think there's real opportunities for companies that are in another part of the world but really want to be in the U.S. market to make Connecticut their home. So we're very actively engaged in Europe, in Israel, in South America, portions of South America, to try to get companies to come here. And in specific areas where we think we have a real strength, maybe it's in our university system in bioscience, or maybe it's because we have, you know, one of the greatest engine makers in the world here, we'll go down their supply chain, if you will, and look in a targeted way at companies. But no, I'm not calling companies just over the border in Massachusetts or elsewhere and saying, hey, you should think about Connecticut. I just don't think it's the way we should be using taxpayer dollars to create those kinds of incentives. To me, is not worth it. It's really much more important to be working with the companies that are here.
Because I'm glad you didn't mention this, and people might not understand, the competition is keen, right?
Oh, it's
between
fierce.
States? Fierce.
It's fierce.
Yes.
It's fierce. And we do occasionally compete proactively. We often compete reactively. And we compete proactively, again, for the kind of companies that we think would be very successful here. They're going to fit into our financial services world. They have a great connection to the great work that's being done at Yale and cancer or whatever it might be. But we're really very picky about which areas we're going to compete in. And one last thing I'll say, and it's because I came out of business, I think, we also really require a return on any investment we make beside a company, right? So if we're working on a financial incentive program to have a company come to Connecticut and grow 200, 400, 600 jobs, we look at the return the state's going to see in the form of income tax and sales and use tax and other returns that are going to come back to the state, downstream employment, you name it. We make sure those are all very positive. We're not going to overpay, if you will, in financial incentives to get a company here.
Believe it or not, we're out of time. Mike, anything else you'd like to add?
Well, thanks for inviting me onto the show. You know, small companies like ours don't always get a chance to tell their story or sit next to the commissioner, which was, I'm very proud of today. And I really enjoyed the session, and I'm so glad you're focusing on this area of manufacturing. And it's, Dan, it's obviously important to you, because it shows in the way you talk and the way you smile and the way you look.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner.
Oh, my pleasure to be here. Mike, thank you for choosing Connecticut and staying in Connecticut. Dan, thanks for your focus on this really important area. I've really enjoyed this hour.
You're welcome. We are out of time. That is going to do it for Front and Center, brought to you by Frontier Communications. Our guests have been the co-founder of CADCO, Mike Shanahan, and the commissioner of the Department of Economic and Community Development, Catherine Smith.